Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
The Steve Cochran Show.
You voted for it and you shouldn't have. Well, I just want
to There's been lots
say,
of fact-checking on that. I'd like to move on to an online question.
She just went about 25 seconds over her time.
She
Could
did
I
not.
Just respond to this, please?
Very quickly, please. Thank you very much. We're going to move on.
Funny. She went over a minute over. And you don't stop her. We're the
Mr. Trump,
campaign.
I want to get to audience questions and online questions.
So she's allowed to do that, but I'm not allowed to respond.
You're going to get to respond right now.
That sounds fair.
And why did it morph into that?
Me,
no, did you? No, answer the question.
Why
do you still believe?
You
I do.
Me all the time. Why don't you
Would
interrupt
you please?
Her?
Please.
I mean, I think we should.
We can
be allowed
no,
to maybe
Mr. Trump. We're going to go on. This is
she has
about
been
the audience.
A disaster. I'd like to know, Anderson. Why aren't you bringing up the emails? I'd like to know. Why aren't you?
We brought up the emails.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't, and it hasn't been finished at all. It's nice to one on three.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton. Thank you very much, both of you.
It's not a good day for America, kids. 6:11, more on the debate throughout the morning, and for me in a second. But before we get to that, congratulations to the Chicago Cubs. Who will eliminate the San Francisco Giants tonight.
Hey, hey, hold
and beat Madison. Rob, is it Robin Baumgartner's brother? Is that his pitching?
It very
Robin
well could be, yeah.
Baumgartner's brother, is yeah. that right? Madison Baumgartner tonight because it's time.
Mm-hmm. It is time.
To lose.
You're right.
And it's
Let's
time for the Cubs
go,
to win. Cubs in San Francisco. Kevin Powell later on that. Bears are awful. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was a close game and
yeah.
it was cute and adorable. Mm. But when they had to win and they had to get it done, it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Fumble, no defense, no defensive turnovers. Yeah. They had some pressure, but that was about it.
But I have some other good sports news.
Yeah.
Hawks open Wednesday.
Yes, they
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
Hawks preview this morning, and Brian Campbell, who will be a regular on the program. I mean, he's more important than he plays hockey, but he'll also be a regular on the program as well here. The machinations and the details of the debate later. This is just a very ugly weekend and night for America because – this is not a reality show. This is not an experiment. This is the presidency of the United States. This is the office the rest of the world looks to. This is the office that when we were all kids, we used to look up to. And last night, it was diminished and brought down to a reality show by the dirtball that is trying to win, and that dirtball is Donald Trump. This has nothing to do with Hillary. I have no aspirational hope for her as president. I don't believe that she'll be able to accomplish much as president. I don't believe she's the right choice. I think she's an awful choice. I think she's a bad candidate. However, I would never, ever, ever let Donald Trump be alone in an elevator with my mother, my wife, my daughter, my grandmother, with any woman in America. And if you can't trust someone to be around the women in your life for 30 seconds, you're going to turn the country over to him. He's a bad, bad guy. Now, I want you to stop and pause and think about this for a second. He called the group of women that he invited to the debate last night during the Monica Lewinsky mess. He called them an ugly group of accusers. He also said that Bill Clinton should not have been impeached and the whole thing was blown out of proportion. He also said that Hillary Clinton had been through more than any woman should ever have to go through. This is while he was cheating on his own second wife. This is while he had engaged in a number of affairs, and based on the video we saw on Friday that was released and talked about all weekend, but not enough last night. It's also during a period of time where he apparently was actively abusing women on a regular basis. So what we have here, my friends, is a psychopath. And I mean this literally. Someone who is mentally ill and dangerous. Because last night, you had the former president of the United States sitting next to his daughter, who as a child went through this embarrassing, horrible crumbling of his parents' marriage. They decided to stay together. It's none of our business why they did or didn't. And yet Chelsea Clinton, with kids of her own, is sitting there reliving it. That's bad enough. But in the back of the room now you have four women who I believe probably have a case with Bill Clinton. I don't know what they did. You don't know what they did. But certainly they seem to be telling a truth to them that's very painful. So they have a right to be upset with Bill Clinton. I suppose in some level they have a right to be upset with Hillary Clinton. But Donald Trump, who called them ugly, who brought them in yesterday to cover his ass because of what he did on that videotape, he's the guy to show them sympathy and empathy when, in fact, in front of his own children, who know full well their father's past, who know what kind of an animal he is, who know what kind of a jerk he is, who know what they did to what he did to their mother, who know what they did to Marla Maples, is now standing up in front of America and the rest of the world, acting like he's righteous in regards to sexual morality? Are you kidding me? He's a pig. He's a horrible, horrible person. And he doesn't deserve the light of day. So when people stop me and they ask me, okay, you're going to vote for Hillary? You're going to vote for Hillary? I have no thrill, excitement, or interest in voting for Hillary, but I want you to listen to me. This is not about Hillary. Hillary happens to be the other person. Hillary happens to be choice B. You don't even have to vote for president if you don't want to. I'd encourage you to do it, but I know this. You cannot put this lunatic in charge of the United States of America. You can't do it. He's not right, kids. He ain't hooked up right. He's not wired right. He's a bad, bad man. And he needs to be stopped before November 8th. So put aside anything you hear today, if you missed last night's festivities, that Donald Trump won the debate and righted the ship. He's a guy who, and please cover your children's ears, he's a guy who on tape said it's okay to grab a woman's pussy, and it's okay to kiss him, and it's okay to grab them in any way, shape, or form. That's who he is. That's how he feels about women. That's who you're voting for if you vote for Donald Trump. And 53% of this country is female voters. I don't understand for a minute how any woman could support this guy. But in fact, if you refuse to be swayed by it, I certainly hope if you're listening, you'll stop and pause and consider. Consider the move you're going to make. Because he has to be stopped before November 8th. For the good of this country.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Hey, Adam Hall.
Hi. Can you give us any insight into the plan for Thursday?
Not really.
What can you tell us about Bear Jones, and is he ready if he needs to be?
Ready for what?
Text Texters 312-981-7200. You're always welcome here. All right. Adam Hoge is set to join us here. Adam on the special button. This is how they have to talk to me here. He's on the special button. Steve, push the big button that says push this button. That's where you are, Adam.
I'm on the special button.
How are you?
Good. By the way, you have been tremendous the last 24 hours on Donald Trump.
Thank you.
So thank you for those things that you're saying.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a very sad time.
So are the Bears.
Yes, and I watched a chunk of the game. It was such a beautiful day. It was hard not to go, why am I punching myself in the face watching yes. the Bears? Why don't I go outside? And I did. But I saw what I believe to be the crucial parts of the game, and they had a shot to win, and they didn't win. And it has nothing to do with the fumble at the end of the game. Lots of missed opportunities.
Yeah, plenty of missed opportunities. 522 yards of offense, and you only get 23 points against a bad Colts team, a team that's just not very good, especially on defense. They came in allowing 31 points, so... You know, for the Bears to put up that much offense but not convert it to points, I think there's something missing here. And, you know, you can look at Brian Hoyer's numbers. They're tremendous again, 33 of 43. I don't know why he's throwing the ball 43 times and Jordan Howard's only running it 16. But almost 400 yards of passing for Brian Hoyer. It's all impressive. But at the end of the day, you still need to be able to score and win a football game like that. And I'm sorry. I think if Jay Cutler's in that game, I think the Bears win.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. But now we're talking about maybe it's time for a full rebuild and moving Cutler on. Hamp brought it up in the postgame. Yeah. Where are you on that?
Well, I think it's coming. I do. I think if you read between the lines at how the – now, first of all, Jay's still hurt, and it was also concerning that he had a brace on his hand yesterday because he hadn't been wearing that the last few weeks. So I don't know if he did something to re-aggravate that thumb somehow, but first of all, we need to take into account that. However, you know, all these reports that came out before the game yesterday, I think by three different national outlets, that that Brian Hoyer was playing for the starting job, and one of them coming from Jay Glazer, who for those that don't know, is very close with John Fox. And if he's the John Fox insider. He's not just Fox's insider. And so when he comes out and says something like that, I think it's very clear how the Bears kind of look at this thing long term. I don't think either of these quarterbacks are going to be the long term answer, but I do think the Bears are probably this offseason going to look for somebody else at that position. I don't necessarily know for sure if that means Jay is going to leave, because it is a team-friendly situation where they can kind of extend him each year. It's almost like team options the way this contract is structured. So don't necessarily have to get rid of him right away, but I certainly think the writing is on the wall here.
What do you do going forward? I mean, you know, if you're a Bears fan, you just go, okay, 4-12, 6-10. I know I'm not going to see a winner. I'll go and see other teams that come in. They're winning. That might be fun. I'll see other players. You know, the Cubs rebuild years where you'd go to see other players come in, or the Bulls or whoever.
That's kind of what it is. I mean, I've made that comparison a couple times in the last few weeks, that the big difference between what the Bears are doing and what the Cubs did is that the Bears just aren't being as obvious. They're not really admitting what they're doing, whereas Theo Epstein came in and said right away, hey, look, we're ripping this thing to the ground. And to be honest, we're going to be probably bad for a few years here. It just watching how this has unfolded the last year and a half, that's what the Bears are doing. And unfortunately, they're going to lose games like yesterday because of it. But if you're a Bears fan, it would probably help if they were a little bit more transparent about the plan. But they're not. And so it's sort of like you're still getting your expectations up every Sunday, and then you're getting crushed by the end of the game. But there are some positives to look at. I mean, Jordan Howard, I think they really have something here at running back. 16 rushing attempts. He should have had more, but he still puts up 118 yards for an average of 7 yards per carry. Cam Meredith, who, by the way, is an undrafted free agent in 2015, already has more catches, yards, and touchdowns than Kevin White, your first-round draft pick from 2015. That's probably not a good thing, but for Kevin White, but it is that they found a guy in Cam Meredith here who looks like he can play. So I think there are some positives here and there that you can eventually point to in the future, but it's not going to come together this year by any means.
Hey, Adam, there are a couple of things that were a little disconcerting for me watching the game, and maybe you can address them one by one here. The one of them was the lack of discipline. Again, yeah. 10 penalties in the game. That's absolutely absurd to have 10 penalties in a game. And the other was the fact that, yeah, they got some pressure on Andrew Luck, but they never can seem to get that turnover when they need it right now.
No, that's still a problem. And that was their big focus on defense throughout the entire offseason, was ball skills. Get your hands on the football, on defense. Create turnovers. They're not doing it. I think injuries have played a part, but I still think they're kind of lacking the instincts that go into creating turnovers. So that is an issue. And, yeah, the penalties yesterday, to have 10 penalties and cost you as many yards.
Just 10?
It seemed like 100.
Just 10
yeah.
penalties?
Yeah, I know. I think, surprisingly, 10 is the actual number. But it felt like it was a lot more than that, no question. And especially that first drive. You have 3 on the first drive. That looked like it was destined to be a touchdown right away against a really bad defense, and they shot themselves in the foot with 3 penalties on one single drive there to start the game.
Who's next week?
The Jacksonville Jaguars. Get excited.
Well, it's a game now to win.
Well, so was this one.
What are you writing about?
Writing about how kind of what I started with the offense, that, hey, you can go with the safer option in Brian Hoyer. Right now it's the only choice they have as long as Jay's hurt, but it's still missing something. You're still not scoring points, and you're still losing, and so it's not perfect.
It's Adam Hoge. Thanks, buddy. Do we have a sponsor that we need to cover? Something you'd like to tell us about?
It should be CJ Wilson Mazda.
Adam Hoge, sponsored by CJ Wilson Mazda.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day.
I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
This is the part, Doc, where he sings your name.
From Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Moe right now.
Morning, Doc. How are you?
Doing great, Steve. How about yourself?
Well, you know, I'm worried about America, but that's not new.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, so let me ask you something about that. Before we get to the stuff that really matters, and you can text in your ailments if you like, and whiny staff questions as well. But before we get to any of that, what's with the sniffing with Trump? I mean, I know you can't diagnose him, but is there a medical box that could be put in?
No, you know, it could be allergy related. It could be, there's a whole bunch of different things that you can get inflammation from your sinuses, Ed, but I don't know. It'd be a wild guess for me, to be honest with you.
You're going allergies?
Yeah, I'm going allergies just because I don't want him to come and sue me.
I think he's allergic to common sense. I mean, certainly that's clear. all right, so Ben Stiller came out last week and talked about the fact that even though he was not yet 50, he had a PSA test, a blood test, PSA screening, and found out he had prostate cancer. This is a big deal because the marker has been 50 for a long time, right?
It has. You know, and it's bounced around as far as when should we start screening, and what medicine has done is we take a look at all the risks and benefits for a screening test, and we say, okay, this is where we should start screening. And, you know, I think the little damage that he did was he said, you know, I had a thoughtful doctor who decided I should be tested. You know, and now we have all these people that are in their late 40s going, geez, my doctor must not be thoughtful. He's not testing me. When in fact,
he doesn't take me to dinner. He doesn't hug me.
Right. So their doctors are following the recommendations. Ben Stiller's didn't. And Ben got lucky. So it's good that it happened. But, you know, we can't just base all of our testing on luck.
But we can also say that if you're 45 years old or 48 years old, you could certainly say, I'm concerned about this. Can I get the blood test, right?
Absolutely. You know, and some people are going to get it in their 40s. You're going to get the test in your 40s if you have a higher risk of it. So, you know, if you're African-American, you're going to get tested in your 40s. You have a higher chance. If you have somebody that's a blood relative that had prostate cancer, you're going to get tested in your 40s. For other people, yeah, you're going to be tested in their 50s. But if you have that conversation with your doctor and say, hey, you know what? I'm a worrywart. I'm a guy that really wants to have this done. Could I have this test done early? Chances are the physician is going to talk to you about the results of the test. There's good things and bad things about the test, but he'll talk about the results. And then do we want to go forward and go ahead and do the test? But high PSA does not mean you have cancer.
So you go from there to a biopsy, correct?
You can go to a biopsy, you can go to an MRI, you can go to, yeah, those would be the other two things that would move on.
But if you had something indicative of a concern, a reading off that PSA test that was concerning, that would be the next step?
Yeah, well, hopefully someone's going to say, hey, you know what, you have one PSA test here, and let's say it's, you know, we would like to see PSAs below 4. We don't like to see them above 10. But let's say their PSA came in at 6. We're going to say, hey, you know what, we're going to repeat this in, you know, 5 months, 3 months, 6 months, because different things can cause the PSA to go up, not just cancer. You can have a low-grade infection in your prostate and have a high PSA. You can take medications that elevate your PSA. You can take medications that lower your PSA. So it's not a simple blood test by any means.
But it is something that needs to be addressed, you know, if you get a funky number, the same way it would with any test with a funky number.
Absolutely.
By the way, funky number, not technically a medical term.
No, not today it's not.
Yeah.
But we'll push for that. No, but if you have a high number, if you have a number like, let's say it's 4, you know, the doc's going to say, all right, let's make sure that that's going to stay around 4 and if it starts to creep up. So watching the trend of it go up is going to have a higher incidence of, boy, now this could be cancer. Now we need to go to that next step. That person that hangs around at 3.5, 4.2 and doesn't go anymore right around there, the doc's going to say, hey, let's just watch this and we'll continue to do tests and we'll continue to do exams and we'll catch this. The vast majority of prostate cancer is very slow growing. His was a little bit more aggressive, but most times, you know, you're going to have a little opportunity here to catch it.
We know that Angelina Jolie took the most drastic measures to, well, defend herself against the fact that she had a very high risk of developing the same sort of cancer that killed her mother. And that's ovarian cancer. That's not something that necessarily is going to be done by very many women. But is there something that is a blood test for women that's similarly indicative of cancer risk?
You know, not so much a blood test. So there's genetic testing that we can do, you know, like Angelina Jolie, her mother had a genetic mutation of this BRCA1 gene. And ovarian cancer, there's a blood test called the CA125, but it's not a great screening test. So ovarian cancer is a very, it's totally different. It's a much different animal. But, you know, we're going to start to see more and more genetic testing. Matter of fact, there's going to be a huge push here in the next year across the nation. And Northwestern, University of Chicago are teaming up here. We're going to try to capture about 1 million people in their genetic makeup so that we can start to track these. And the impact of capturing that data and following it out is going to lead to much better testing and more things similar to what Angelina Jolie went through.
We continue with Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. Andrea, say hi to Doc.
Hey, Doc, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm good. You know, I know we're right in the middle of allergy season, and some of us get allergies worse than the other, but I've been having these sinus headaches. What would you say, what can you do, if anything? I know everyone has their different remedies, more caffeine, less caffeine, take an Advil, take an Excedrin. What do you do to relieve the pressure?
Yeah, so decongestants are great for that. One thing you don't want to take is an antihistamine. So if you think of your sinuses as essentially holes in your head or caverns in your head, and if they get filled up with stuff, you want it to drain. So you want to decrease the congestion there. So take a decongestant. Now you're going to blow your nose more. You're going to cough more, but that's okay. You're getting rid of that. People that take antihistamines, which are drying agents, are going to dry that stuff out and concrete it and get it in your head. And you're going to go from just simple allergies to a big sinus infection.
Huh. And it does seem like there's more sinusitis and things of that nature than ever before, the same way there's, you know, these odd allergies mm-hmm. with kids that we never had before. Is any of that explainable?
No, you know, I don't think so. I think we're getting exposed to so much, you know, the air quality in cities. If you get out into the country, you know, are you going to be allergic to more actual tree pollen and things like that? Yeah. So there's those allergies out there versus, you know, what we're getting exposed to here.
I don't want to make it.
You did talk about, you know, a blood test. Before we hang up, there was a very interesting thing that came out about a potential blood cancer test.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, feel free. Tell me.
Yeah. No, so, you know, we're always looking for a simple blood test in cancer screening. Now, it hasn't, you know, don't want everybody to start running to their doctor to ask for this test. But what the scientists found and what was reported last week, if you think about, I'll give you a simple analogy. You have your car, and your car gives off exhaust, okay? Think about that. If I could capture that exhaust and look at it and say, oh, based on this exhaust, Steve drives a Chevy Impala. No Thunder Blue or whatever you guys say
Blue
at that
Thunder.
Point.
Blue Thunder.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Come on, man.
So think about this. Cancer cells give off proteins. They give off something called isotopes. So do regular cells. What they have found is that they can track and find and identify the isotopes that come off of cancer cells. So now, if we can do that into a blood test, all we would look for would be these isotopes that would come off of cancer cells only, not produced by healthy cells, only by cancer cells. So essentially, what we could see, probably going to be over 10 years, is going to be a blood test for breast cancer, which will essentially eliminate the mammograms until your blood test is positive. So once your blood test is positive, now we know there's cancer. Now we have to go find it.
Boy, I'd be on board for that.
So we're close to...
Yeah, that's great.
So we're close to that being realized, but then the approval process and everything, you think it may be a 10-year window?
Yeah, you know what? And you'll start to see things like this get advanced pretty quickly just because of the impact it's going to make. I would love to see it, you know, in 5 years, but it was very fascinating when it came out. And now all these other people are going, wait a second, if that's true for breast cancer, we should be doing the same thing for colon cancer. We should be doing the same thing for ovarian cancer. That would be more fascinating.
I'll let you roll in a second here, but a couple of texter questions. First about the PSA. Can bike riding and having sex prior to having the PSA test elevate your test results?
Absolutely. So bike riding is kind of funny. People say, well, what do you mean? But yes, you know, impacting on that prostate can definitely increase it, and it's one of the most well-known causes for a slight increase. So if a doctor does have a PSA, a high PSA result, he's going to ask you those questions. Are you taking any of these medications? You know, did you go for a bike ride before that? Had you had intercourse before that? And if so, let's not do that for the next test, and we'll see what those results are.
So you fast for a cholesterol exam. You need a fast for bike riding and sex before your PSA test.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
And then back to your sinuses for two questions. What about a neti pot? Do you like that? That's a nasty little procedure at the house. Get in the bathroom, start pouring the tea kettle through your nose. But it does seem to work, I guess, right?
Some people actually swear by it. It's essentially just a mechanical way to remove some of the congestion. Some people love them. Some people say they don't work. As far as the science behind it, it actually works. I mean, there is a mechanical you can remove.
You're flushing your head.
Exactly. Yep. People that like it, continue to do it because you're not doing yourself any harm.
It's very, very. I did it once in desperation, and it was not one of my favorite sensations. And finally, we hear a lot of stuff about these sinus surgeries now. And I don't want to make any ENT surgeon here because that's not fair to you. But on the basic level of answering the question, when should somebody be asking about whether or not surgery is appropriate?
Yeah, if you have chronic sinusitis where you're always congested for long periods of time and they've gone in with medications and they find that the little holes that open up the sinuses to drain are not big enough to drain and will never keep up with that, that's time to go in and talk to the ear, nose, and throat doctor. The changes in sinus surgery have been dramatic. So people that say, oh, gosh, I heard about someone who had sinus surgery 10 years ago and it's terrible. No. They're much more accurate, much better. They can go in and really actually do quite a bit, with no cutting, just going up, you know, through the nose. And I would say anybody who's suffered with them chronically, it's at least worth a discussion because you come off of medications and you feel a lot better and you sleep better and your quality of life increases.
Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. Hang on for a second, Doc. I have to ask you about something off the air. Any whiny staff questions before we roll? Everybody feeling good?
Feeling wonderfully.
Okay. All right. Fine.
Wow.
And when will you be coming in to give us flu shots for your annual party?
Well, you told me you'd let me know when Andrea used up all her vacation days, and then we'll come in that next Monday.
I think November is a good time.
So next
first,
Monday,
second
then?
Week in November.
No. So next Monday is great.
It'll probably be in the next 2 weeks. Yep.
Perfect. Yeah.
How about
she's in all
two
week.
Fridays from now?
I don't like your chances. Okay. Texter says I have Dunlap's disease, where my stomach Dunlapped over my belt. Can Doc help me? I'll get back to you.
I think a lot of us have that problem.
657. As a woman, you watched that debate last night. What was your reaction?
My reaction, well, first of all, you and I had texted a little bit when the videotape surfaced. So mm-hmm. I heard the audio first, and then I thought, you know, I'm going to watch this because maybe he didn't realize it. Well, he obviously didn't realize it was on. Those words, when he said what he said, and speaking as a woman and being completely nonpartisan, made me sick because I don't have children, but I have goddaughters. I have a lot of cousins, my mother, female family members. We all have them. It sickened me. It's crude. It's lewd. And it's unacceptable. And really, honestly, Steve, and you and I talked about this too off the air, the whole debate of all guys talk like this, no, they don't. Not one of my friends or family members, my father, God rest his soul, no man, no respectable man talks that way.
Well, it's not even about respect.
Grab it, take it when you want it.
No, we don't. No,
come on.
Not about respect.
No respectable man talks that way.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I've been around sports my entire life.
Me too.
Andy, you've been in locker rooms your entire life.
Right.
I have never come across a guy who has discussed that. And by the way, if anybody does have that conversation in front of a group of guys, this is what guys would do. Guys look at him and go, dude, what the hell's wrong with you?
Right, right. And I'm not talking about she's hot, she's cute, she's
no,
pretty.
No. You're talking about
this
sexual
is
assault.
Grabbing women, right, and doing what you want with them. That is unacceptable.
Well, and it's also a real man doesn't have to talk like that.
Right.
Because a real man knows that that's not how you behave, act, or think. Because that's that, you know, I tweeted this out this week and I believe it to be true. You know the difference between Donald Trump and Bill Cosby? Quaaludes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only difference.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, Trump just didn't get the prescriptions because he is an absolute. Listen, the words that apply to Trump cannot be said on this radio station. Mm-hmm. However, if you meet me in the parking lot after the show, I'll give you all of them.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
You called what you said locker room banter. You described kissing women without consent, grabbing their genitals. That is sexual assault. You bragged that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk.
We have seen him insult women. We've seen him rate women on their appearance, ranking them from 1 to 10.
You can say any way you want to say it, but Bill Clinton was abusive to women. Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attacked them viciously. Four of them here tonight.
We saw him after the first debate spend nearly a week denigrating a former Miss Universe in the harshest, most personal terms. So, yes, this is who Donald Trump is.
713, Todd Graham, fine SIU product and a debate expert, standing by. And you see Todd on CNN all the time, and read him as well, hopefully. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Hey, Steve. What's going on?
Well, I'm a little worried about America, more so than before, because last night was I just never thought I'd see that. I never thought I'd see a presidential debate be diminished to something just barely above the Real Housewives.
And you knew it was going to happen as soon as that press conference an hour before the debate started.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. But to me, it does say something, too, about Trump's mindset that he will do anything to anybody to be proven right or to feel right about himself without any respect for the office that he wants to take over. And that should scare people, too.
I mean, there are a lot of things that should scare people about it. The first is that, you know, it's not just that, doesn't have any respect. But, you know, when you combine that with the language of he would jail Hillary Clinton, you don't do that in democracies. Right. You don't threaten your opponent to go to jail. Yeah, you just don't do that. And so there were some scary things that happened. He's had way too many close leanings towards saying things like, I like Putin. I think Assad's doing a good job. Neither of these, by the way, are accurate, but both of them show that he sort of likes strong men as leaders. And then when he says something like he would have an independent counsel investigate Hillary, well, that's already been done, and they've said she didn't do any wrong, and that he would have her in jail. I'm just like, that's frightening kind of talk.
Yeah, it's unprecedented, because anybody who has aspired to that office and has become a major party nominee understands it's not done. You don't do it. You can't do it. There was another moment last night that kind of got glossed over, but I think was pretty stark, too. We all, I think, have an understanding that he doesn't understand the job. He doesn't understand the process. But as a man of 70 years old that wants to be president, he should understand how the United States Congress works. There was a point in the debate where Hillary Clinton was making a point about something she tried to do in the Senate and couldn't be done. And he said, well, if you're a better senator, you could have gotten it done. There's not a single incident where one senator, barring parliamentary rules and leadership shenanigans, can move mountains the way he suggested. I mean, he needs Schoolhouse Rock, Todd.
Yeah. This was, I think, on just the basic sort of, I'm a bill. My name is a bill.
Exactly.
I'm on Capitol Hill. I love that one. It was the basic question, I think, about taxes or something. And he's just like, you could have fixed that. Well, I mean, she wasn't in the Senate for 30 years. He always says in your 30 years of public life, assuming like when she was first lady, she should have been able to fix
right.
these things, et cetera. So it's not just that he doesn't know how the presidency works. Apparently, he doesn't know how the first lady works. He doesn't know what the Senate does. He's just not exactly sure what anybody is supposed to be able to do. And when she was in Arkansas, apparently she was also supposed to be able to fix the national problems. So, it sounded really childish when he just said, you should have been able to do that. If you were a good senator, you could have fixed that by yourself. It's these sort of things that just, I actually wrote in my column for CNN today, one of the annoying things about Trump, frankly, is the hyperbole is just enough is enough. My debate teams, I've often taught that hyperbole is second only to lying, because judges tend to not listen to you if you exaggerate one claim after another after another. It's kind of like the boy who cried wolf, right? And so I wrote down the things last night, and I only got some of them, but he used the word disaster for education, the inner city, Syria, and Obamacare. And then he said, everything is broken. The phrase everything is broken about Obamacare. Well, that's just not true. And for immigration, he said nobody has ever seen numbers like this, and that immigrants are going to cause crimes like we've never seen. And he said it's the greatest Trojan horse of all time. And then he said NAFTA is the greatest trade deal disaster in the history of the world. My particular favorite is last hyperbole, nobody has more respect for women than I do.
Exactly.
Right, right.
Yeah, I did a spit take in my own house at that point because I was unfortunately sipping something.
Morning, Todd. Hey, I found the deflecting to just be out of control as well. I lost count at how many times he... Now, she didn't shine, and I'll ask you about that too, but I lost count how many times he didn't answer the question, specifically when Martha Raddatz asked him twice about the Syrian refugee crisis. Is that a debate strategy that works?
No, not when it's this obvious. Now, in a normal year, we might be saying something like, well, Hillary Clinton could answer the questions a little bit better, but not this year because it looks like she's just answering them flat out directly compared to what he's doing. Normally, politicians have most of an answer about the question, or they're at least on topic. But I think the Syria question's a perfect one. I actually wrote about that because you're absolutely right. He was asked twice what we would do about the humanitarian crisis in Aleppo, and twice, he basically had no answer. And then when it came to Hillary, she said these words. She said, first, we should start a no-fly zone. Then we should perhaps arm the Kurds. And finally, we should target Baghdadi. She actually had an answer. And right. I think that was our starkest, most difference and our biggest contrast between the two. In one candidate doesn't know what he's talking about and won't answer the questions. And the other is giving it a full-fledged shot. Whether you like her answer or not, she's answering the question, saying this is what our policy should be.
There was a point during that answer where you could feel Trump just reaching, going, what would Gary Johnson say? What would Gary Johnson say? Talking with Todd Graham, you read him at CNN.com, debate expert, nationally known debate expert, and doing it at SIU as well. Before I let you go, though, a couple of points on Hillary. Her strategy last night seemed to be a little bit of rope-a-dope, lay back, hope that Trump implodes even further after the weekend. I don't know that that worked. I wasn't wild about the fact that Raddatz and Cooper jumped off topic so quickly when 53% of America are female voters and Trump's opinion on women should matter. So that went by the boards. The whole thing was just Cirque du Soleil. But there was a point later in the debate where Hillary Clinton tried to answer a question by tying it into Spielberg and the Lincoln movie. And even if that's true, with her reputation and her inability to tell the truth on so many occasions, she looked like she was making it up. And it's incredible to say this, but I don't think she has room to make those kind of mistakes.
She doesn't. And here's the thing. On paper, this is what I write. The difference between on paper and actual, like I coach debate as it's practiced. A lot of these people coach debate on paper where they know a logical fallacy, but they don't know how it really works when you hear one. So Hillary Clinton on paper, that answer is pretty good. Well, I can compare myself to a good president. Let's pick one. It's like Lincoln. And Lincoln had, you know, he would talk to one group one way and another group another way. That's fine. But in this election, you don't want to compare yourself with a great president right now, right? Because that kind of makes you look silly by comparison. It reminded me of the Dan Quayle, you know, comparing himself to JFK. So she shouldn't do that. She should have known that she was going to get mocked for that. She should just stick to the correct answer, which is we do, as politicians, have to persuade different groups. And that means we need different approaches in front of different people. You want to call it public and private, that's fine and that's fair. I call it pragmatism, and I'll defend that practice.
Yeah, that's a perfect example.
Todd,
thank you.
Todd, I liked her answers because, as you said, she did answer more of the questions than he did. But I didn't like the fact that she kept referring people, go to my website. That really got annoying to me at one point.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's because he throws out so many lies. I counted them today on one website. It had 19 lies or misstatements by him. And I think she's decided there's no way I can answer them all. I use the phrase, it's in debate. We say, you just throw a bunch of stuff. We'll call it stuff today. You throw a bunch of stuff up against the wall to see what sticks. And so that's his strategy. He just throws one attack after her and a bunch of stuff on the wall to see what sticks. And we all know it takes longer to tell the truth and explain something than it does to make accusations. And so she would never be able to finish her speeches if she actually had to answer everything he brought up one after another. So she's made a conscious effort to just say, go to my website. Now, that's good, and it's what she should do, because if she got bogged down in answering what I counted up were the 21 lies, actually, that he told, she'd never get there. However, she's still got to pick her times that she needs to answer some of them. So when he said on his horribleness toward women, frankly, and he said, you know, Hillary has been terrible to these women. She's just been awful to them. Well, no, she hasn't been. And so she needs to stand up for herself and say, that's the part that I'm going to have time to talk about. Now the rest, go to my website. You know, so every now and then just go to my website for the rest, but but right here I'm going to answer this one thing in the 15 seconds I've got.
Every woman who's ever been victimized by an affair in America who was watching that last night had to be just nauseated. And any man who has any semblance of guilt for putting a woman through that had to be nauseated as well.
I was absolutely sickened
by it. All he did last night was get more of the people that show up at his rallies to cheer maybe a little bit louder. I can't imagine a single person watching that went, yeah, that's my guy.
He doesn't know how to debate. When we have three judges in a room, the only thing we do before the round is say, okay, on the topic we're debating, what does judge number one think? Okay, that judge is for it, and we're on the pro side, so we're good. What does judge two think? That judge is neutral. We'll have to work hard. Judge three is against us. So we're going to just focus on judges two and three. We actually ignore the judge who we think agrees with us. Because we're
already got him
in the debate, and they're going to vote for us. Trump does the exact opposite. Last night, he was debating for people who read Breitbart. It was that debate. He was debating for the people who are going to whoop it up when he says we should throw Hillary in jail.
Right.
And that's not getting independent voters, and it's certainly not getting women. I mean, Hillary Clinton doesn't get a whole lot of empathy from people in the country. They have trouble putting themselves in her shoes. Yet, most people have been cheated on, if you're a man or a woman, at some point in your life. And Donald Trump is now risking making Hillary Clinton a very sympathetic, in fact, figure, and us having empathy for her, which will turn even more independents and moderates toward her and away from him.
Right. You have to remember, too, Bill Clinton denied all of this at first. So if you put her in that role, yeah, she was a victim. She didn't know.
Well, we can't. We can't get inside people's marriages. I don't care if they're running for president or they live down the street. You just can't.
I'll give you a quick fact. I teach interpersonal communications. One PhD is in. And in fact, most of the time, you've probably had friends who are getting cheated on, and you're like, how did she not know? Or how did he not know? It's a very common thing because everybody else knows but the person involved in the relationship. And it's because we have a vested interest to not think that our relationship partner is cheating on us.
Right.
So, of course, her first reaction is going to be, no, he's not doing it. No, he's not. And to say these women are liars, because that's what everyone does.
Right.
That's just the way it is.
It's a human response.
Yeah, exactly.
DrTodGraham.com and on CNN.com. Thank you, sir.
Oh, you are very welcome. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Appreciate it. We'll come back, talk a little Hawks in a second, Brian Campbell later, and maybe get you on the road to Hawks tickets. Stand by for that on 720 WGN. The 729, Billy Bush not on the Today Show today. I think he's auditioning to be the new Zamboni driver for the opener. Pair of tickets to the Hawks opener. I'll be there. You should be there, too. It's Wednesday night as the Hawks take on the St. Louis Blues, and we get started on what I believe will be a magical season, David Copperfield. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. You win the tickets for Wednesday night, and you'll be entered to win four season tickets for next season, courtesy of our friends at Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. All right, so here's what I want to do. We got to get somebody on the phone. Give me a caller on the phone. I don't want to give up this question until the caller's on the air. And Andy Mazur, sitting in for, what's the guy's name that's normal here?
Dave.
Dave. Dave Bennett.
Yep.
Go Cats.
Thanks. Andy Mazur will ask the question of Joe if Joe has the right answer. Great. If not, we move on.
Okay.
Let's go to Joe now. Good morning, Joe. How are you? Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Great. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks. You headed to work?
Yes, I am.
What do you do, Joe?
Ready to go. I'm a professional speaker and a financial advisor.
Oh, okay. How's business in the speaking side of things?
Fantastic.
All right, good. Andy Mazur has a question for you, and in this question, I will give you a plus or minus of one.
Okay.
Of one.
I was going to ask you about that.
Andy, ask Joe the question.
All right. Brian Campbell, the Chicago Blackhawks defenseman, or keep in mind, a defenseman.
He'll be on the show in about an hour.
What was his career high in goals scored in one season?
Plus or minus of one, Joe, when you're ready.
I have no idea. 12.
That is exactly right.
Is that true? Oh.
I thought there was no way that anybody would guess double digits for a defenseman.
Exactly the number.
When you laughed, I thought, oh, poor Joe.
Well, what's funny is I believe him when he said he had no idea.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
I have no idea. 12.
12.
All right, my friend, you're going to the opener. How about that?
Awesome. Yeah. Fantastic.
Hawks and the Blues, Wednesday night, Four Seasons for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. I love that. Hold on, Jim. Man. That was great.
I thought we had a real tough question, too.
So did I. I don't know. I hate you guys for asking this question. 12. Tremendous. All right, what are we doing, Jake? Taking a quick break. Back with the big story next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I don't care. We need somebody that can kick a damn field goal. How do we lose to this box of garbage called the Colts? When am I going to have the segment, What Did John Fox Bring? You know,
it's a good one.
Yeah. What did he bring, Kaz?
What did John Fox do?
He had on a nice pullover shirt, and then
what
on
did
the
he bring
bus.
The winning effort?
Oh, he brought nothing. He brought nothing, but he'll pick up his check and it'll still cash the same way.
Win the damn thing, and that's the kind of mentality that you have to have. And if you don't have it, sell the team. And if you don't have it, don't coach it. And if you can't play it, get the hell out of the game.
Wow. Strong. OB, get it done. Awesome. Hamp, get it done.
Awesome radio.
Kaz, get it done. Carmen ducking. It's all there. Dan Hampton, Hall of Famer. Good morning, Hamp.
Yes, it was a very long, frustrating day, capped by an ugly brawl featuring some of the most unattractive people you'll ever see. Of course, I'm talking about the end of the Bears game and the kicker missing the field goal. Jesus.
You're such a fan of kickers. Will you go see Connor and try to, you know, comfort him in his time of need?
Offer him solace and comfort? No, not a chance. Guys, you know, this isn't high school. I'm watching, you know, some of the wrap-up in sports and it's high school and the college. It's professional. You're a man. You go out there and you do your job. And unfortunately, we can't get enough guys to go out there and complete the mission. And you know, the real frustrating thing is that there's some good stuff. You know, what Jordan Howard is doing is great. What the offensive line has been able to do is great. But ultimately, you know, all that gaudy yardage, you got to score points. And we're not making plays. We're committing mistakes, doing all the things that bad teams do that enable them to get beat. And 1-4, well, you can kiss it goodbye. You know, I try to stay optimistic as long as I can. But this is, you know, Indianapolis, they've got three guys that should be on our roster. They could make our roster. The rest of them, it's not a good team.
You mentioned yesterday in the post game, you're 1-4. You got a 6% chance of making the playoffs. So if we're saying goodbye to that, being as generous as I could possibly be, is this a Cubs rebuild? Is this something where we got to take, you know, a deep breath and go, we're going to get two more seasons of this before they win?
Well, I guess, you know, that's the sexy comparison now. Everybody goes, ooh, we're going to do what the Cubs did. But, see, we have five first-round draft picks on our football team, and four of them didn't play yesterday. Only one did. That was Kyle Long, and he's having a poor year.
Well, it was a beautiful day. A lot of people wanted to be outside. Maybe they were doing something.
Yeah, well, yeah, they were predisposed with injuries. You know, right. Jay Cutler, Kyle Fuller, Kevin White, and, of course, Leonard Floyd, has disappeared into the mist. You know, he had an owie, a little strained calf, a week ago, and now doesn't even get on the field. So the whole thing is perplexing.
Hamp, so many questions, so little time, but let me narrow it down to a couple, and they all seem to land at the feet of the head coach. And the fact, you know, you mentioned Jordan Howard was running like a madman, but he only gets to touch the ball 16 times, and then you factor in 10 penalties and such a lack of discipline.
Those are two, you know, points of contention. You know, okay, we've just got one running back, and we don't want to burn him out. But when you're facing the highest paid player in football on the other side of the field, and you know he's capable of beating you at any time with a couple of real quick plays, well, you try to figure out a way to keep him away from the football, and you do that by running the ball. And as you said, and hey, 16 carries, The kid's 21 years old. He's not tired. Keep giving it to him. This isn't about, you know, fantasy yardage and stats. This is about winning games. And it's like we don't think of the true objective, which is winning. How do you win? You maximize your scoring opportunities and minimize theirs. When you give the ball back to Andrew Luck 11 times during the course of a game, he's going to find a way to beat you, and he did at the end with T.Y. Hilton. So you're exactly right. In my mind, the guy's averaging 7.5 yards a carry. Keep giving him the ball. Burn the clock. Let's get a win. Let's get to 2-3, and then figure out a way to match up with the Jags the next week. But, you know, it's almost like, oh, well, he's got over 100 yards. Okay, we checked that box. Let's go on to something else. The overarching objective of winning kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And it's really, yeah, like I said, it beyond perplexing. It's angst-ridden.
Cam, what was going on between the two safeties, Adrian Amos, I think it was, and the other safety? They were fighting on the sidelines. Was that just emotions?
Well, a lot of times, okay, on goal line. And everything is so much more magnified because, obviously, you know, it's, what was it, like 3 yards from the end zone. So out in the field, if you make a tackle after a 3-yard game, it's not a bad tackle. But on the goal line, you cannot allow 3 yards. So you become so much more focused on play action. And when the hats of the offensive line come off and they're down, the safeties, the linebacker, everybody takes a step or two to the line of scrimmage. Smart teams, like the Colts, they kind of have a nifty tight end that pops out and, you know, presents himself in the end zone. And before a safety, and I believe it was Jones-Corte, that probably had the coverage, before he can, you know, realize, oh, my God, it's play action, get back, well, it's too late. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that, and you cannot expect these safeties or even linebackers to have great coverage if there's a good run fake. But the real crux is, and for years, Obradovich has screamed about this, and Doug Buffon years and years ago, back when you have to put somebody on the tight ends, and you jam them at the snap of the ball. Okay, if it's a run, well, you're in control of them. If it's a pass, well, you'll let them go, but you've given the guys in charge of covering a second and a half to recover. Well, nobody touched the tight end. He popped loose. Nobody was in position to cover him, and it was too easy, and that's why they were arguing. And at least they didn't give each other high fives. At least they were upset about it. And maybe, just maybe, they're going to get somebody on a tight end to jam him, to buy those safeties, the linebackers, a beat or two, to where they can come off of the run fake and get back and cover.
Where do we go from here?
Well,
because I don't think it's Dairy Queen for snacks.
Hey, the head coach is basically saying, you know, I'm going with the hot hand at quarterback. So all the Jay Cutler haters in town probably have kind of gotten real close to getting to that promised land where Jay Cutler is now going to be, you know, relegated to backup or injury, you know, relief, and they're going to go with Hoyer. And, you know, the kid, you know, he's piled up an awful lot of numbers, 3 straight 300-yard-plus games, and there's a lot of good stuff. But the other part of it is, you know, there's a progression where you look at your primary and then your second and then your third and your fourth. And a lot of the times on the last play of the game, Alshon Jeffery was single coverage, and it was almost a sure touchdown if he's looking and he reads it as such, but he didn't even look because, and he said in the paper, hey, there's no way they're going to single cover, you know, Alshon. I expected them to double him, so I was already looking, oh, well, that's kind of cheating in the sense that you're not really doing the progression. So once defenses start figuring that out, and trust me, they will, they're going to start, you know, they're going to start doing a bunch of, like, Matador coverages where they look like they're going to give somebody a double, and then they're going to start setting traps other places where, you know, they're trying to entice you to throw it here, and there's going to be somebody underneath. So, it, like I said, there's some good stuff the quarterback's doing, but you know, at the end of the day, it all goes back to the basic fundamentals. And fundamentally, and Andy, you said it, you know, the penalties. We had 10 penalties that were critical in the scoring drive, you know, where we are down close to the red zone or in the red zone, and then we get a holding call, we get a motion. In one of the drives, we overcame our first and 25, which was a good thing. But after a while, when you start piling up the penalties and you get 8, 9, 10 penalties, you're almost certainly going to lose.
Before we let you go, Hamp, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason I love football, and I think the reason most people love football, is because it's special. You get a short window. This isn't 162 games. This isn't 82 games. You got 16 games. It's a fall. It goes into the winter. It's a test of men against men, some of the best athletes in the world. And you got to be tough. You got to be strong. But going back to this idea of a Cubs rebuild, fans don't deserve that, and they should not be put through it. And as much as I have a respect for the Halas family and all they've done through the years, if they are not committed to put a winner on the field at whatever cost it takes in the current market that is the NFL, they need to sell the team. And they need to move on, and they need to do it as quickly as possible. The fans in this town deserve better than they're getting. And that means, if that means wholesale changes, that's what it means, from the coach to the quarterback to anybody else. But you shouldn't have to be a Chicago Bear fan and wonder if they're going to win this year, next year, or the year after that.
Well said. But, you know, and knowing that everything you just said, obviously there's a lot of truth to it. And at some point that has to be addressed. But I think the just the pressure of, hey, guess what? You know, this was a Bear town forever and ever. And guess what? It's turning into a Cub and Blackhawk town. And trust me, the McKesky family realize that, and if I know them, they're not going to be too subtle about letting John Fox and Ryan Pace, the general manager, know, hey, we have this window, and guess what? Not only have we slammed our fingers in it, but somebody's going to break it out if you guys don't start getting some better results. And you know, and I know that, you know, of course, every regime comes in and says, we need 3 years to turn it around, blah, blah, blah. Well, this year was supposed to be going better than it is. And there were a lot of beatable teams that we lost to thus far. It's not acceptable. It'll be very interesting to see the dynamic that is, you know, and the pressure applied to this regime here in the next month or so.
Thanks to you and to OB and to Kaz and to Carmen, too, or as I like to call him, Mark, Doc Carmen, for just great, great, great Bears talk. There's nobody better. And
and we bleed it, and we hate it, and hopefully better days are ahead. Yeah. But until then, go Bears.
Thanks, man.
And let's get a kicker.
Seventh caller now that wants to kick. Let us know.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
8:12 now, and Wintrust Community Banks Hour underway. Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Good morning, buddy.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Nobody wants to put me in jail, so that's good.
I'll do it if you want me to.
I would rather you didn't.
Okay. I have two things to take up with you before we get to the normal collection of things.
Okay.
And by the way, there's a clip from SNL we'll play. It wasn't as good as last week's show, but it was. There were a couple great moments.
It was totally great.
Yeah. Billy Bush should not be suspended. Here's why. Billy Bush was a jackass in 2005, and he has no journalistic responsibility to go, hey, you know that tape we have in the back? We should leak that to somebody. He comes across as a complete baboon and a bad guy. And he can actually claim it was 11 years ago. And he's been very sincere and apologetic again and again. And I don't know Billy Bush. I'm just saying the guy, I believe the guy is truly sorry and truly embarrassed. Now, having said that, NBC is in a terrible position because sponsors and viewers are going to go, how can you have Billy Bush on the air anymore? Because he was there goofing around with Trump. So I don't know what NBC does, but it's I just think if they fire Billy Bush now, he's probably got a lawsuit in his contract.
I've heard that there are a lot of staffers on the Today Show that will not work with him.
Prior to this or because of it?
Because of this.
Okay.
Because of this. So, I mean, that's an added dimension to this now. You know, more of NBC's dilemma. What do they do about this? Just the whole thing is so weird and creepy. The, you know,
just more of the positive effect of being in near Donald Trump.
As they step off the bus and he says, you know, how about a big hug for Donald? You know, after this creepy conversation, then kind of, you know, putting the woman on the spot to give him a hug and then says, how about one for the Bushy?
Yeah.
It's you know what, honestly, listening to it, it's disgusting. There has to be a level of professionalism. I mean, look at Dean. Dean, you interview a million celebrities. You are the epitome of classy and respectful.
I don't agree with that at all.
Don't interrupt her. Don't interrupt.
You know, but this, you know, just take two people in the same entertainment field and look at how Dean approaches interview. And
you
this
should
guy.
See what he. You should see the way he was hugging Dorothy Roberts and Betty White.
Yeah, I know that's true.
Well, that's different.
That's true. That is true.
Betty White going, and Dean's all hands. Leave me alone.
Same thing with Abe Vigoda. Now that he's gone, I can tell.
Dean, I retract everything.
I can tell the story. You know what? I don't even think it's professionalism, of how you act in your job. Although, you know, in this kind of setting with people like that, there is a certain professional decorum. It's what kind of manners were you raised with? What kind of basic courtesy do you have? How do you view other people, and what kind of respect do you give other people in regular life, whether it's a super hot model or, you know, it's an average person, whoever it is, either you treat people with respect or you don't. But this, you know, this wingman, how about a hug for Donald? How about one for the Bushy?
Well, but here's why that portion of it was so creepy. It's because of everything that came before that. Because, as I said, and women need to hear this, normal men, normal sexually active, horny men, don't talk the way Donald Trump talked on that bus.
Yeah.
And when Donald Trump said, grab her by the genitals, the whole conversation is so ridiculous. That's when it's over. You don't come out then and go, hey, give her a hug, because you know you're dealing with a guy that's got an extra level of twisted and wrong and sick.
Knowing the conversation that took place inside the bus.
Yeah.
And the
creep, that makes the hug
the
worse.
Creepy thing that happened outside the bus, given what you know that they were both saying.
I changed my mind. Fire him. Throw him out.
Right.
I wonder what Jeb Bush is thinking about this. His first cousin.
Yeah.
Billy Bush's first cousin.
George W. and Jeb and all the Bush brothers are first cousins to Billy, and Bush won the president is his uncle.
So what is Jeb Bush thinking now? It's like, wait a minute, my first cousin knew about this tape the whole time.
Yeah.
I was battling Donald Trump and did nothing. Of course,
he was going to make Thanksgiving a little awkward.
Yeah. Jeb Bush releasing a statement right after the video was released Friday. As the grandfather of two precious girls, I find that no apology can excuse away any of Donald Trump's reprehensible comments degrading women.
Got a texter here in 847. Yes, they do talk like that, Steve. You're a moron. I don't know if this is from a woman or a man. Let me explain something.
Oh, that was me.
Okay, well, that makes sense. But let me explain something to you. I'm a 55-year-old man that's been around sports my entire life. Nobody talks like that. Nobody. Nobody says, and again, cover your kids' ears. Nobody says, grab them by the pussy. Nobody says that. It doesn't happen. And if it does, you have a responsibility as a man to shut it down.
I've never been around any conversation my entire life that's like that.
I have heard, I have engaged in some pretty inappropriate discussions, but they're all Boy Scout compared to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't agree with It's just locker room talk. It's how guys talk.
Ridiculous.
It's not how guys talk. It's not.
We'll come back with Creepy Clowns, Alec Baldwin.
I'm sending you another text right now.
Yeah, do something that switches up the font so I don't know what you're... Dr. Dre, Finding Dory, and I mentioned this before, but congratulations again to Ryan Lochte and the ficus tree that he was engaged to earlier today.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richer, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
I was a little surprised, Dean Richards, to see that Ryan Lochte's engaged this morning to Janet Yellen, the head of the International Monetary Fund. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, Janet Reno, actually.
Oh,
was
is that
the,
it? Who's he engaged to?
He is engaged to a Playboy model. Her name is, she's got three names. It is...
you mean like an alias?
Kayla Ray Reed.
Playboy Kayla model. Ray Reed.
Kayla Ray Reed.
Combined IQ of the two of them?
Is it higher or lower than the number of gold medals that he's won as an Olympian?
Well, God bless the kids. I hope they're happy.
I wish them nothing but the greatest happiness. Apparently, they met just this past January.
Mm-hmm.
They began dating in March.
Sounds like love to me.
They say that they got serious in April, and Kayla Ray hinted in an interview in the Daily Mail that they met on Tinder.
So
it's true love.
Yeah, well, if you meet on Tinder, I think that your first assumption is, that's the gal for me.
What's a Playboy model doing on Tinder?
Yeah, it seems like she'd be all right with meeting people.
Wait a minute, first of all, you're Ryan Lochte, you've got all these medals, and this is before the scandal. You know, which may change things a little bit.
But what's her name? Kayla Ray Reed?
Kayla, yes. Kayla Ray Reed, yeah, three names.
All right, I'm doing some research
names,
while
don't you
talk. Go ahead, I'm researching.
Don't you? I don't know why either of them need to be on Tinder. Mm. Seems like they would be able to meet people not online, not on a dating app.
Yeah, well, they're
hookup app, right?
Yeah, because Ryan Lochte's got plenty of money, and she's a Playboy model. I mean, I imagine they're meeting... You know, a lot of high-class folks.
That's where, if you want a really long-lasting relationship, it seems like that would be the place where you could really find out about somebody going on, seeing their picture, and asking if they want to hook up.
Well, she's a lovely young woman. Now, as far as I can tell, because she doesn't have any clothes on, but she's a lovely young woman, and he's a delight.
They announced their engagement the way most people in love do.
What'd they do?
On Instagram.
Yeah. Yep.
Because that's where true love, you're not really in love, but there's Instagrammed a picture of them.
Have they written their vows yet? How about their names? Have they written their names yet?
It's not really vows. It's just the clapping of their hoof on the ground.
Ryan, would you like to read your vows? You're super hot. We should get married.
I'm on Dancing with the Stars.
We should like totally get married. Actually, we have Ryan Lochte here. How much do you love Kayla Ray Reed, Ryan?
I mean, she's my world. And, you know, when we were at In-N-Out Burger last night, and I just looked in her eyes after she put some ketchup.
Both of her eyes?
I think she's got two.
Okay.
I haven't really been looking that far.
What do you like? What do you like most about her? What's the one thing that really sets her apart?
You know, I would say it's probably her legs.
Okay. All right. Well, that's very special.
I mean, I totes love her.
It's an
I knew it.
Exclusive interview.
Thank you, Ryan. It's Ryan Lochte.
Exclusive. He talked to nobody else.
Dr. Dre. What's going on with Dr. Dre?
So there's
this is my world, the hip hop world.
This is Steve's world, the world of hip hop. This. There's a Lifetime movie that's going to be coming out on the 15th.
Boy, I didn't see that coming. Dr. Dre and Lifetime.
Well, this isn't, it's not really his life. It's it's a biopic based on the life of his one-time girlfriend, I guess you might say. They did have a baby together, so I guess it was more than just boyfriend-girlfriend. But singer-songwriter Michelle, who is alleging in this biopic that he was very abusive to her. She's gone on record in saying that he was very physically abusive to her. That
this is Dre. Dre was abusive.
That Dre was abusive to Michelet. And now she is behind the making of this TV movie. So Dre now has filed a cease and desist order and is threatening a lawsuit against Sony Pictures, who produced the film, saying denying the abuse, saying that there's no evidence to support all the allegations. So whether or not this is going to go to court, nobody really knows yet. I'd be pretty shocked if Sony nor Lifetime pulled the movie. This is fantastic publicity for the movie. Frankly, I did not know that there was a movie about Michelet and Dr. Dre that was coming up, but I do now because of this lawsuit.
All right, and Alec Baldwin is so creepy as Donald Trump. It's almost off the charts. And Kate McKinnon has never been more brilliant. This clip you're going to play here, this is a chunk of the cold open?
This is part of the debate when they weren't saying the P word that you used a little while ago.
Right.
I'm so sending this tape, by the way, to the Broadcasting Museum.
You should. You absolutely should.
This is the day that Steve Cochran said
the word that rhymes with
D-D.
Wussy.
What's... I can't even. I can't. It's, yes, this is part of the cold open.
It's part of the cold open. Part of the beginning of the show.
Open of the show. And Donald Trump is, supposedly on CNN being interviewed about the Trump tape.
Here we go.
Mr. Trump, many Republicans have stood by you through a lot of other scandals, but are now pulling their support. People like Senator John McCain.
Coward.
Harley Fiorina.
She's a four.
And Idaho Senator Mike Crapo.
More like Crapo.
But you must admit, this is bad for you.
The only person I need is my running mate, Mike Pence. I love Mike Pence. I respect Pence. I'll always have Pence.
Well, actually, today he said he can't condone your remarks, and then he canceled his campaign events.
Mike Pence is a loser.
When I heard it, I was deeply, deeply saddened. It made me feel just horrible and very depressed.
Now, since Mr. Trump's comments were so bad.
So bad, just horrible, horrible.
Do you think he should drop out?
No, give him a shot.
It's really funny. It's really funny. And Alec
No, give him a shot.
They're clips that probably we should not be playing, but and we are not. Clips where, quote, Donald Trump did not know that he was on camera talking to somebody off camera.
Yeah, it was really funny.
I mean, they pushed the line even for themselves on some of the content that they handled. Lin-Manuel Miranda was really good on SNL, I thought, also. And did you see the bit with Kate McKinnon where she was playing Donald Trump's campaign manager?
Yeah.
Kellyanne
Conway's Day Off.
Really funny.
Very funny bit.
Really, really, really
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, SNL's had a couple of good weeks. This week, not as strong as last week. Last week was an all-timer. But if you didn't see this week, there's three or four really good bits there. All right. Oh, creepy clowns. Nobody loves clowns more than you, and there's creepy clowns all over the place. What are we doing about this?
There's no, all clowns are not creepy. Most clowns bring joy.
Mm-hmm.
Most clowns.
That's your defense?
They bring laughter. They bring.
I like clowns.
They bring happiness.
But there's a whole creepy clown epidemic of clowns being creepy.
That's what, like four people?
My point is,
making a bed for the happy clowns.
My point is, Bozo needs to get a brigade of ass-kicking clowns together to go and clean this
up. Go take care of the creepy ones?
Yeah.
All right, I'll bring it up to him.
We got Chicago PD. We got Chicago Fire. How about Chicago ass-kicking clowns?
Bozo and Cookie.
And Wizzo.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
Check. The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with the Blackhawk. Sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
You know the words. Brian Campbell back where he belongs with your Chicago Blackhawks. Well, I've had a chance to do it before, but let me say it again. Welcome home, buddy.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me on again.
And I appreciate you being on. Looking forward to talking to you all season long. Here we are just 2 days away from the opener. You've done this a few times. How many seasons in the bigs now?
I think this is my 17th year pro. I got to go back and look at
17 professional seasons. So sometimes they have to watch Hossa and Soup because they'll wander off into the woods if they're not careful. But Wednesday night, it all starts again. Do you get butterflies on an opener? Do you get more up for it?
For sure. I think definitely always openers. You want to get off to a good start. It's a big game. It's kind of set the tone for the season. So big rivalry, obviously, and in front of the home folks. So we got to be ready to go and get off to a good start.
Breakfast of the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business. We have a listener question coming up that we'll do here in a little bit. I assume your family is thrilled to be back?
Yeah, everybody's happy. The girls are all excited. Obviously, the wife's extremely excited, but we're enjoying it. We're enjoying being around for fall weather here in Chicago. So it's quite nice to be set and ready to go. And I think the girls will be cheering loud.
Now, you've stayed in amazing shape, and you're as fast as you were when you left years ago, which is amazing. And I'm really looking forward to you and the hammer. I'm hoping that's the line. I assume it will be. Of course, once Hammer gets out of jail.
Yeah. I'm not sure who I'll be playing with yet, but we got a good back end that anybody can play with anybody.
Well, that's true, but I'm really looking forward to you playing and running up and down the ice with your speed. Having said that, I'm 55. I know you think I look younger. Staying in peak physical condition, as I've always done, I get up in the morning, I have aches and pains. Do you have more aches and pains now that you recognize, or part of being in shape means you have less of that?
I think everybody has aches and pains, but it's kind of what you do to prevent them. We had a day off yesterday, so I kind of try to stretch a little bit, where if I was 22, 23, I wasn't doing anything that day. So just try to kind of keep the body oiled up a little bit more. So that's just takes a little bit more time to get ready for practice and games. But I enjoy doing it. So I think that's the biggest thing. If you're not enjoying doing it, then you're not going to have success at it.
What's the biggest advantage at 17 years that, you didn't have at 10 or at 5 years?
I'm a lot smarter now. There's a lot of things that I probably did wrong back in the day. So now I'm a lot more mature, and it's better that way. I'm enjoying my time and my life in this league right now.
Somebody told me that, and this makes sense in any sport, the longer you play, the better your instincts, right? So maybe the puck bounces in a particular way off a particular board in a particular city or here at home, but you just know where you need to be on the ice, which saves a few steps, saves a few strides, all of that. And they used an interesting phrase. They said you can learn to be instinctual.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I know the league. I know most of the players now. Obviously, the new guys coming in, you don't know as well. But, I think you learn to be, hopefully be smarter than the other person and know what kind of, what they're thinking they want to try to accomplish, or say a situation where you have a two-on-one against you and just trying to bait them into doing something that you want them to do as opposed to what, they're trying to, they do what they want to do towards you. So I think, you try to, play a little cat and mouse game, even though the game is so quick. There's areas where you can be a lot more relaxed and not be running around as much as I probably did my younger years and a lot smarter with where I am on the ice.
Hey, Brian, I know there's some familiar faces for you coming back, but there's been an influx of youth onto this team. What's that been like, and who are some of the guys that have stood out to you?
Well, I think it's great. I think it's the young guys obviously keep you young, and it's fun coming to the rink and seeing them every day. And they're all really good kids, which is, they all put the hard work in, the effort in. They want to learn, and they ask questions. And I know that that's what I used to do when I was younger, and they want to get better every day, which I want to help them to get to that point. So You know, there's a lot of good young kids coming in here. Tyler Motz played really well, and Forsling, the D-man that I've played quite a bit with actually in training camp, has been great. And, you know, I think Hartman's coming into his own now and stuff. So, you know, there's going to be some new faces, but I think they're going to play big roles on our hockey club.
You mentioned Mott, and you mentioned, you know, mentoring these kids. Who was your guy when you came up? Who was the person that actually took some time to set you straight and try to make you better?
I actually had James Patrick, who is now an assistant coach in Dallas, so we don't like him anymore, right? but he played for the Rangers back in, I think, probably the late 80s. He was a big guy, played for Canada on World Cup teams and in Calgary. He was a big-time player, but he played till he was 41, I want to say, maybe 42. So, wow. You know, he kept himself in great shape, but, you know, very a great player. He went to North Dakota, I think, for college. So he just had so much knowledge for me to pick his brain with.
Thanks to the people at MB Financial Bank, we got a Blackhawks autographed puck to give away here. We're going to give it away to Glenn Domovic, Domovic. Soup, what rookie prank got played on you when you made the NHL?
What rookie prank? I think there's you hear the old things where you go skate around the ice by yourself. So that definitely happened to me early on, where they're like, okay, you go out and lead the team, and you're buzzing around skating two laps, and there's nobody behind you. You're out there solo by yourself. And I think the crowd is all just laughing, and all the guys, you look back at the bench, and they're all laughing there. So, you know, that's definitely a common one that you hope to learn before they try to pull that on you.
Are there updates to that? Are there new ones, or the classics get repeated?
I think the classics get repeated, and then the other ones we kind of keep inside inside our four walls of our room. But
yeah, no doubt.
You know, in today's day, it's all, you know, I think there's a lot less rookie, you know, like, you're like, it's a lot like they're on the same page. I think we're all so entrenched on getting to where we need to be and winning games that, you know what, you know, a lot of times they have a rookie dinner here in the NHL, and that's it. You know, it's rookies maybe pay for dinner for some of the older guys, and that's it, because they're such a part of our family and we need them to be successful.
Well, and again, I think it's one of the things the Blackhawks organization does extremely well. So, Coach Q is going to be on later this week. You want me to see if I can get you some extra ice time?
That'd be great. That'd be great, Steve. I appreciate that. Happy Thanksgiving, too.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving. You mean Canadian Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Jeez, I should have had this down. What do you eat on Canadian Thanksgiving? Is it always moose?
Poutine.
Yeah, moose. All day long. No, we have a big turkey dinner. I kind of don't mind it, because then it's not as close to Christmas.
Yeah.
So you're not, like, sometimes you need to have a turkey dinner, and then you need to take a couple months off.
Right. Just got to lay down for a while.
Yeah, I'm ready for a few months.
You know, Taser is so careful about what he eats. I understand that he is fed turkey ground up with a eyedropper. They just drop a little bit into his mouth like a bird.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I can believe it.
All right, great having you on the show. Great talking to you. We'll do a lot of that this year, and thanks for being on, bud.
Okay, you guys have a great day.
Let's play you some sound from the weekend. Starting with our friend Chuck Todd. Slapping around Mayor Rudy Giuliani. And I was texting with Chuck Todd last night a little bit, and we were both pondering why Giuliani has decided to hand his integrity over. But here's Rudy Giuliani yesterday with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press.
Hillary Clinton actually specifically described that she's two different people. To the financial people who were given millions of dollars, she's on their side, and she wants them to be a big part of the government. But she tells them she has to pretend to everybody else that she isn't.
Well, then what does that say? If you believe that Hillary Clinton says one thing in private, and that means what she really is what she is in private, should we assume what Donald Trump did in that Access Hollywood bus is really what Donald Trump is like in private? I mean, that's what you're implying here with Hillary Clinton.
You know, Chuck, the reality is both sides have sinned.
You know, Chuck, I don't believe half the crap I'm saying. I'm just out here because nobody else will defend Trump at this point. Well done by Chuck Todd.
Oh, what happened to Giuliani?
Last night on the debate itself, obviously the question of the Access Hollywood video came up. Here's a warm, caring apology from Donald Trump.
Received a lot of questions online, Mr. Trump, about the tape that was released on Friday. As you can imagine, you called what you said locker room banter. You described kissing women without consent, grabbing their genitals. That is sexual assault. You bragged that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly, I'm not proud of it. But this is locker room talk. You know, when we have a world where you have ISIS chopping off heads, where you have, and frankly, drowning people in steel cages, where you have wars and horrible, horrible sights all over, where you have so many bad things happening. This is like medieval times. We haven't seen anything like this, the carnage all over the world.
The thing that didn't get brought up last night but really needs to be considered here is by saying this is just locker room talk, everybody ought to get over it, you are discounting how women feel when they hear that talk. Even if you just dismiss it as locker room talk, which, again, it is not. It is the talk of a sexual predator. But even if you dismiss it as just locker room talk, you're saying to the 53% of voters that are female in this country, yeah, walk it off. Just boys being boys. And that says a lot about Trump. We'll take a break, get the news, more sound later before 10. Kevin Powell coming up on your Cubs, and Pat Brady's take on the debate as well. He's live out on the West Coast this morning because he wanted to get as far away from it as possible. We'll have Pat on next hour as well on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Might be the greatest intro on the station. Kevin Powell joins us from San Francisco in a moment. Right now they're scaring all the women out of his hotel room, Fisherman's Wharf. Cubs tonight, San Francisco Giants tonight.
Late game, 8:30 game.
Not out there, it's not.
Yeah. Well, late for us.
6:30 game out there.
We'll watch it from bed.
And Andy, what's the pitching matchup?
It's a couple of guys you've never heard of. Jake Arrieta, I think is how you pronounce the name.
Yep, familiar with him.
Yep. Madison Bumgarner.
What is his real name? Like Dave Smith or something?
No, it's really Madison.
Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, they call him Mad Bum. And there's actually there's a town in North Carolina named after his family. Bumgarner.
Does he come from
really?
Money?
I don't know if he does or not.
And how is he related to Robin Baumgarten?
I believe that is her long-lost seventh cousin, three times removed.
I understand. Okay, great. And how are the Cardinals doing?
Cardinals
still not in the playoffs?
Well, actually, the other day they were all in line to pick up their NL Central Participants trophies.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
You got to enjoy this as a Cub fan that the Cardinals are gone for as much, you know, just as long as you can.
And the Mets, too. Ronnie would be having a field day.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I met somebody when I was in North Carolina a couple of weeks ago. I met somebody who never lived here and had never been to Wrigley.
Okay.
Who loved Pat and Ron.
Yeah.
And would listen to GN every chance they got so they could hear Pat and Ron. So let's go to Kevin Powell now that we found him and all the women have been kicked out of his room. Live from San Francisco. Are you sitting upright?
They're not exactly out of my room, Steve. I just hushed them to the bathroom in the closet. So they're still here, but I apologize for not answering my phone earlier.
Solid move by you. But you are sitting up, right? Nothing annoys me more than getting a West Coast guest that lays down while they talk.
No, I'm sitting up, I promise,
all right,
Steve.
All right, so we just talked about the pitching matchup tonight. I say it's over. Are you? Do you have that feel or not so fast, Steve?
Not so fast, just because Jake Arrieta, you're not exactly sure what you're going to get from him. Madison Bumgarner is just so good. I think it's 23 consecutive postseason, scoreless postseason innings from him. He's going to be a tough guy to beat. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. And, you know, Jake Arrieta, to me, although he's been inconsistent, when he is on and he does have command and he's not walking batters, I still think he's the best pitcher on the Cubs staff. So if you do get good Jake Arrieta, then, yeah, there's absolutely a chance to win. And, you know, the Cubs offense is something you can never overlook. And the Giants know that. Madison Bumgarner talked about it yesterday. So I just, it's hard for me to think that this Giants team with Bumgarner on the hill at home won't get at least one win. So I'm not completely sold on it being over just yet.
Okay, so the Bumgarner mystique is one thing. But again, as you pointed out, I mean, the Cubs offense has battered around some pretty good pitchers, and it's only been when they've had that approach, and it starts at the top with Dexter Fowler, and that's that real patient approach to get the good pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Joe Maddon's talked about Fowler from day one of spring training, you know, the you go, we go type thing he's been saying. So, you can't overlook the Cubs offense. It's as Bruce Bochy put it, they're a perfectly balanced team. It really is like almost a perfectly constructed lineup in terms of offense and really defense and everything. Everything's clicking right now for them.
Reminds me of my Stratomatic 72 Oakland A's.
Real balanced, nice righty-lefty combo.
Total.
Throughout
Joe
the lineup,
Rudy.
Power,
Joe Rudy
speed.
Had such a good year. Yeah. Anyway, back to you.
I like it. It's a nice mix there.
Yeah. So let's get to the really important part of tonight's discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's a 2-1. Maybe it's a 3-2. When do you consider pulling your starting pitcher at San Francisco? It's sort of funky. It's sort of cold. You got nothing but confidence in your lineup. I mean, if it's tied late, you don't let him go more than 100 pitches, do you?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just all sort of where they're at in terms of pitching matchup and who Madden wants to turn it over to.
You want to save his. You know, that's the advantage of a 2-0 lead. You know, you don't have to stress Arrieta tonight if he's not completely 100%.
Yeah, I don't think Joe Maddon will hesitate at all. If Jake Arrieta doesn't have it and Joe Maddon recognizes that, I don't think he'll hesitate at all to pull him early. Now, I mean, the bullpen.
I say pull him after the first batter. Just to be safe, pull him after the first batter.
Well, you know, the bullpen pitched 5 2/3 after Hendricks was pulled Saturday. So, you know, they got their work in. But I don't think Joe Maddon will hesitate at all if he sees Jake Arrieta's off. But the one interesting side story to this is that Arrieta and Bumgarner are two of the best hitting pitchers in all of baseball. And as Jason Hayward put it and Joe Maddon said, it almost has an American League type feel to it when Bumgarner and Arrieta are pitching because those guys aren't easy outs. I mean, they both said they're going to approach one another at the plate as if they're any other position players. So I'm interested to see. Bumgarner Saturday night before the game, I'm sitting there watching him hit batting practice at Wrigley. He hit 2 or 3 off the video board and left, and he put one on the Waveland. I didn't see any other batters do that in batting practice. And that was the starting
pitch. He's a big boy, isn't
Bumgarner.
He?
Yeah.
He's a big guy. He's a big guy. Country strong.
He was using the Sammy Sosa bats that were left over.
And I know you said North Carolina, but you got a little redneck in him too, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah, he's got that particular
a little
color,
a little redneck maybe.
It's red,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Madison. Yeah.
He's wearing his camo hat all around AT&T Park yesterday.
He just gave me the ball and I throw it hard.
And Family Day was holding a pitchfork in his picture.
Country strong.
Yeah, country strong.
You got a question for Kevin?
Kevin, it's nice not to have to worry when a middle reliever comes in. I was thrilled with Travis Wood and his home run. Do you see Madden doing anything weird, maybe as they advance, like pinch batting Travis Wood, anything stranger than we've already seen?
I think Saturday was just strange because Hendricks left the game so early, and then Wood came in, and they weren't going to pull him after one, so they left him in. But Bruce Bochy and Joe Maddon are some of the most creative managers in baseball, so I wouldn't rule anything out. And that was a big topic of discussion with the Giants yesterday was the Cubs pitchers being able to hit. It's kind of a crazy thing, but Joe Maddon has a deep bench, though, so I don't know if he would turn right to his bullpen for a pinch-hitting situation, but I wouldn't rule anything out with these guys managing.
When you were talking to Hayward yesterday after the workout, did he give it any indication as to whether or not he's going to be starting tonight?
It sounds like he will, yeah. I mean, I think there's a chance Soler could get a start in left, maybe Zobrist back at second, Bryant at third base, and then maybe Biles will come in off the bench to pinch hit, or he made moves Zobrist to left later in the game and then Baez to second. But there was some indications. There was Zobrist, Wilson Contreras, Jorge Soler were all getting work out in left field yesterday at batting practice. So Joe Maddon mentioned it. He said the lineup could be a bit altered today, so it'll be interesting to see what he rolls out.
Did you go to Saison, the most expensive restaurant in San Francisco?
No, I forgot about Saison. I got to get over there. But I did. It was when I checked in to get my credential, they handed me two $20 vouchers to the concession stands at AT&T Park. So I'm most looking forward to that tonight, Steve.
Garlic fries. They're all over the place there. Oh, man. The whole place smells like garlic fries by about the second or third inning.
That'll chase the women out of the room.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you need a night off after your weekend anyway.
Right.
You need to focus on work. Have you done any sightseeing in San Francisco?
I sort of walked around once I left the park yesterday.
What do you mean, sort of walked around? You're in San Francisco, man.
Yeah, I know. That's why I walked around.
Go to Alcatraz, Kev.
What do you mean? Like what you said? You meant like actual? I didn't have time for none of that stuff. It was just sort of walking around.
Well, you got a night game today. It's 7:20 in the morning. You got a night game today.
Get on the BART, you know.
Get your tired behind out of bed. Send the hookers home, and get in an Uber and go around town a little bit.
Go to Alcatraz or the zoo.
That is my plan. I'm going to post some stuff on WGNRadio.com in just a minute here, and then it's going to be out and about. I'm going to wander over near the Cubs Hotel and try to find some Cubs fans. I haven't seen one Cubs fan yet, by the way. Not one single Cubs fan.
Well, you know, we don't travel.
Maybe that'll change today.
Yeah, I hope so as well.
I'll check things out. I'll check Saison. Is that how you say it, though?
Saison.
Saison. I'm trying to have you have the most expensive dinner ever on a WGN expense account.
Yeah, I think I saved a few bucks on this hotel, so maybe management will let me splurge on a meal.
He's staying at the Motel 5.
4.5.
If someone brings a bulb, they leave the light on for you.
Look, there's no ants in the sink. So.
All right,
in the room.
There's a bed and running water, so I'll survive.
Yeah, the problem is the bed is where the water's running from. All right, enjoy the day, dude. I'll talk to you later.
All right, guys, take it easy.
That's Kevin Paul.
Bye, Kev. A nice guy, didn't even go to Saison, taking the station pocketbook into account.
I mean, absolutely.
He's slow playing it.
Yeah, he's doing it tonight.
Kevin Paul's reports are brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. .926. Paula Jones, Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, and Kathy Shelton all paraded out by Donald Trump last night in a faux effort to show support for those women who deserve support. Their stories have been told through the years. Their cases have been adjudicated, but it doesn't mean they weren't wronged. However, Donald Trump is not the proper person to fight their case. And certainly he had more than enough time to bring up their issues in the past. But no, he decided to do it last night before the debate to try to put a cloud over what he did on the Billy Bush Access Hollywood video. And we're told more videos are to come. It was referenced a few times afterwards that Trump had previously called these women unattractive. Here's the specifics. It was a 1998 appearance on Fox News. And Donald Trump said at the time, it was Neil Cavuto hosting one of the shows as well. Still there, of course. He said, Linda Tripp may be one of the most unattractive human beings I've ever seen. Not women, human beings. She's unattractive. And Lucianne Goldberg, her agent or wherever she is, terrible woman. You look at Paula Jones. I mean, the whole cast of characters. Paula Jones is there last night. Says, it's from hell. It's a terrible group of people. The whole group. Truly an unattractive cast. I mean, this woman, I watch her on television just vomiting. She's so bad. The whole group. I'm just talking physical, but I'm also talking physical. And at the time, he expressed some sympathy for Bubba in regards to the Juanita Broderick case, who was also there last night. And he said, I don't agree with the victims. His victims are terrible. He's a victim. Clinton. He did put himself in that position, but he's a victim. So this is Donald Trump. But then again, this was 1998. And as we found out, he didn't really mature until recently.
Right.
So, you know, 11 years ago, he's only 59. He had to grow up from the time he was 59.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. That he was to I use the excuse. I was young. I made stupid comments. Yeah, at 59. It's abhorrent. Nobody should talk. This is 2016. You know, he referenced medieval times. Yeah, this is medieval language to be talking about women like this.
Yeah, and
even 11 years ago.
Everybody listening to me knows a 59-year-old and a 70-year-old. Do you know anybody that was 59 that's now 70 is drastically different than the person they were at 59?
Not completely, no. Not drastically.
Here's Trump's apology about the Billy Bush video.
I've never said I'm a perfect person, nor pretended to be someone that I'm not. I've said and done things I regret, and the words released today on this more than a decade-old video are one of them. Anyone who knows me knows these words don't reflect who I am. I said it, I was wrong, and I apologize. I've traveled the country talking about change for America, but my travels have also changed me. I've spent time with grieving mothers who've lost their children, laid-off workers whose jobs have gone to other countries, and people from all walks of life who just want a better future. I have gotten to know the great people of our country, and I've been humbled by the faith they placed in me. I pledge to be a better man tomorrow and will never, ever let you down.
That's part of the psychosis that, because he said that many times, I'll never let you down. You've already let your supporters down again and again and again and again.
You know what what comes to mind with this? Completely disingenuous, and to say in parading these four women out 90 minutes before the debate to say they asked to be here and it was our honor to help them. How are you helping
them
by re-exploiting them?
No, we already know what happened. Breitbart got a hold of the four women and volunteered to fly them in. Hillary Clinton did not get off scot-free last night, nor should she have. There was the moment where she was asked about Bill Clinton calling Obamacare crazy. Here's that.
He clarified what he meant, and it's very clear. Look, we are in a situation in our country where if we were to start all over again, we might come up with a different system. But we have an employer-based system. That's where the vast majority of people get their health care. And the Affordable Care Act was meant to try to fill the gap between people who were too poor and couldn't put together any resources to afford health care, namely people on Medicaid. Obviously, Medicare, which is a single-payer system, which takes care of our elderly and does a great job doing it, by the way. And then all the people who were employed, but people who were working but didn't have the money to afford insurance and didn't have anybody, an employer or anybody else, to help them. That was the slot that the Obamacare approach was to take. And like I say, 20 million people now have health insurance. So if we just rip it up and throw it away, what Donald's not telling you is we just turn it back to the insurance companies the way it used to be.
She's not wrong, but is all of her answers last night were too long and sounded too much like a sermon.
Yeah.
You know, she just has no ability, apparently, to shorten things up, get to the point, and hit it. There was a point at the end of the debate where one of the town hall folks said, say something positive about each other. And she said about Trump, the one thing I respect about him is his kids.
Right, his children.
Stop, right there.
Right.
Just stop. Now it's on Trump to say something positive about you. Trump then followed up with, she's not a quitter. She's a fighter. She's not a quitter. Which, by the way, runs kind of counter to the fact that he said she has a stamina problem. I mean, the guy twists himself into knots every time he opens his big fat mouth. Anyway, more on this before 10. It's 9:31. Still to come. Pat Brady's take on what he saw last night. And we continue with the big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Last time at the first debate, we had millions of people fact-checking. So I expect we'll have millions more fact-checking because, you know, it is it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Charming. 9:44, Pat Brady, live from the West Coast. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Great. How you doing?
Well, you know, I'm fine. I feel the same way I do after any debate between Clinton and Trump. Pretty much want to head in.
The person I felt the sorriest for, though, was Chelsea's husband. He had to sit there in that box. I'm sure he's like, what am I doing here?
Well, but you think about it. And to me, this goes to Trump's lack of empathy about everyone, including his own family. His own family knows he's had affairs. They know what he did to their mothers, because Marla Maples is involved in the story as well. So you had the former president of the United States sitting next to his daughter after he trashed his family. And then you have the kids of the guy on stage, and behind all of them, and by the way, sitting in a row in front of Senator Durbin.
I saw that. Yeah.
You have the four women that were flown in by Breitbart. Unbelievable. It's freaking Cirque du Soleil.
I felt more sorry for Ivanka, Tiffany, and his boys' wives, thinking this had just, what their father and father-in-law, the words that had just come out of his mouth.
Yeah, it was a race to the bottom. I don't know what Jason said this morning, but Trump standing over her, he looked like a big ape. I don't know what he was thinking.
I thought some of that was
killed for that.
I thought some of that was camera angles, but he had to be aware of where he was, because it looked like he was lurking the entire time. And she's not tall, and he's not short.
Yeah, and McCain did that 8 years ago, and they Saturday Night Live did a whole skit on it, the roaming around on the town hall. But I just thought it was odd that it just that behavior you wouldn't even do at a cocktail party, let alone a debate when the whole world's watching you.
That opening clip was important because there was a point. There's several points last night where he demonstrated his lack of intelligence when it comes to the basics of the job. One was when the idea of Hillary Clinton as a failed senator came up, and she said, I'm one person. I tried to do it. I couldn't do it. And he said, well, if you're a good senator, you could have. Obviously not getting his copy of Schoolhouse Rock out to understand how a bill is done. And then secondarily, and more importantly, that charge that you'd be in jail. Dictators put their opponents in jail. Presidential candidates don't. Something else he doesn't seem to understand.
No, nor does he understand. I'm going to get my attorney general to appoint an independent prosecutor to investigate. He has no idea, and this is the third or fourth example of it, of separation of power, starting from when he went after the judiciary. And that,
yeah, it's the same thing that got Nixon to the point where he had to resign, started trying to find special prosecutors to go after his enemies.
Well, that's why at the Justice Department they created the tax division because of Nixon. So it's the same. It's the same. So he doesn't understand any of this. Last night was really disturbing what he doesn't understand. I mean, stuff we knew anyway, but I thought it was really bad last night.
Exceptionally so. Now, did she miss an opportunity? And considering the chemistry of the room, I don't know how we could claim she did. But did she miss an opportunity to go harder on the Friday video? And is a Friday video, it's hard to even imagine this, but is a Friday video going to become old news?
I don't think it's going to become old news, but I think it was risky for her to go pound on it too much. Then she comes across as screechy, and that's the criticism of her. I think it speaks for itself. I didn't like the format last night because it wasn't really a town hall. They didn't, if you've ever been to those town halls, I know you have, they're much more interactive than that was. That was just the moderators directing the people to read the questions. We didn't get the give and take I was hoping we'd get.
Yeah, because what I wanted was a little bit of what we saw in the military situation where the Trump and Hillary separately, where the candidate had to look in the eyes of an actual potential voter and answer their question.
Yeah, the people, and I know it'd be difficult to do, but they read it and it was kind of robotic. There was no real interaction between them, and that to me was that would have been good, because I'm not sure if Trump could handle that. Although I give him credit, he did better in that format than I thought he was going to do.
Yeah, but the bar is so low, right? I mean, this is exactly what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
The fact that he didn't spit up on himself or his head didn't come detached, we go, well, he had a good night.
I've never seen a candidate for any office ever be less briefed or have less of an understanding of the issues. And he just rambles off, and it's really a lot of it's not coherent by the time he's done answering the question. But the bottom line is, I thought last night was a push. He needed a win. He's getting creamed with women even more so now after the tape. So it's hers to lose, and I think she will win. But I don't think he moved the needle at all last night. Again, he won the Alabama primary just like he did in the last debate.
Pat, the USA Today this morning coming out with a list of more Republicans pulling support, not just women, but men pulling support since the revelation of the tape on Friday. Do you expect that to hurt him, or has the damage been done and what's going to happen is going to happen now?
Sure, it hurts him, but the big thing is it depends on what the Republican National Committee does. And the long story short, Trump does not have a ground game. Elections are all about figuring out how many votes you need, identifying your voters, and get them to the polls. That requires people on the ground knocking on doors, making phone calls, getting people to the polls on Election Day. Trump has no ground operation. He's relying completely on the Republican National Committee to supply that ground operation for him to get the vote out. And if they pull the pin, which they did over the weekend, on the mailings at least, he's done.
Okay, so Mark Kirk tweeted on Friday that the GOP should engage rules for emergency replacement. Would that happen at this stage?
Nah, it's a long shot. It's a Rule 9. It would be so difficult to do. People have already been voting. I mean, it's been done before, not at the presidential level, but in other races where the candidates have died or been incapacitated after voting has started. But it would be virtually impossible. I think it requires a majority or supermajority of all the members of the Republican National Committee. I just don't think there's the stomach for it. And we're only 4 weeks out.
And here's the thing. Even if they could pull it off at this point, it's Hillary Clinton's worst nightmare.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, you get somebody else to come in and the Republican Party tries to save themselves and then she has to run against anyone other than Trump.
Give him a chance.
Yeah, that's a fresh story.
I agree. That's her worst nightmare. It was Tim Kaine, the VP nominee, Hillary's VP nominee, was on yesterday and they didn't ask him. They asked him about what should happen and they didn't ask him the follow-up question. Would the Democratic National Committee oppose the Republicans trying to change their nominee? I'd be interested to see if anybody ever asked that question, because there might just be a big legal battle then, too.
But there has to be conversations with Ryan Priebus, who I know you know well and like, and I do as well. But there has to be conversations that went on since Friday and say, look, we blow this up. There'd be a lot of heat. However, we would also be seen as the people that save the Republican Party, regardless of how the presidential election goes, as opposed to letting it twist in the wind and have 3 more weeks of Trump damage.
I agree. But the only good news is right now, a couple things. In the Senate races, which is the most important thing to me, we're doing better. I think we're going to keep the Senate. And as long as Trump stays within 4 or 5 points in some of the key states, then we're okay. It won't be the disaster that I think it might end up being. But if he gets 8 or 9 down and we lose the Senate and seats in the House, then that's exactly the risk they take by not stepping forward right now.
You and I have talked many times about how bad a candidate Hillary Clinton is. There was never more of an example last night than when she told the Abraham Lincoln story, which, by the way, I have no reason to believe isn't true. But when your record is that you lie about so many things and it sounds like you pull Abraham Lincoln out of a hat, it was laughable.
I don't know what it is, because I know she's not dumb, and I give her credit for her life accomplishments, but she is the worst candidate I've ever seen. She just doesn't get the whole thing on empathy or understand. I think they're both just disconnected. She hasn't driven a car in 25 years, and he's Donald Trump. I don't think they have any ability, either of them, to really relate to people that are going to come out and vote.
Well, and that's my, you know, and for 100 years, I don't know the political scientists will be able to get to the bottom of this, but the irony to me is always that the people I grew up with, hardworking blue-collar folks who have supported Trump completely, will be the first to send their kids to war if he gets a tweet he doesn't like. And Donald Trump, under every normal circumstance, would cross the street to avoid you. He has no interest in you. He has gold-plated toilets. The entire thing is a charade and an act. And it's all about him and his ego.
Absolutely. You know, it hasn't been brought up, and I wish somebody would. He basically dodged the draft.
Right.
He pulled a hamstring and got out of going to Vietnam.
Right.
And so then he talks tough in the big, tough game. There's a great analysis today, psychological analysis, saying that he basically is insecure. That's why he treats women the way he does.
Oh, I totally agree.
The way he does. But it's scary, and I agree. This guy, last night, I love this stuff, always have. I was sickened watching that debate last night.
Yeah,
and particularly him and the way he just go right to the bottom. It was terrible.
And again, the 4 women that he paraded out there deserve to have their story continue to be told. I have no doubt they were wronged by Clinton. I have no doubt that Clinton was a scumbag. And Pat, you and I are the same age. We were the guys in the 90s that were screaming about Clinton ought to be thrown out of office. And women were the ones blaming Monica Lewinsky.
And so was Hillary. There is an argument there to be made, and I remember that, Steve, too. Now I have daughters that age, and to imagine that you send your daughter to be an intern in the White House, and the commander in chief does what he does with her, whatever her culpability is. But to me, that was just so outrageous. Particularly now that I have daughters that age, I cannot believe it that there wasn't more outrage. But the only risk that I think he took last night, by going after and trying to bring these scandals up again, is the only time she polls well is when she's a victim.
But I will say this, regardless of what she did or didn't do in the 90s, she is, on paper, the victim. Clinton's the one that was out having sex with other women and doing whatever he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't, even though Donald Trump gets up in the morning and he has to have it both ways, because that's the only way he can function in life, you can't say the tape from 11 years ago doesn't matter if the Clinton stuff from 20 years ago does matter. I mean, it's idiotic.
And I know they had some traction with the actions versus words, but listening to that tape on Friday, it was Steve, we both sat in locker rooms, played a lot of golf. I've heard a lot of things. I never heard anything like that.
No, guys don't talk like that. And I said it this morning. I'll say it again. Because if we heard guys talking like that, we go, dude, what's wrong with you?
No.
Yeah, I mean, then, for us, that's a pretty tough line to cross. But, I mean, it's really, you know, I'm kidding. But as bad as that, it was just so bad.
No man that I know would ever say anything like that. And you know what? Honestly, Pat, it was disingenuous. The apology was disingenuous. And to bring all those women out again, to me, was re-exploiting that.
Yeah, exploiting them. Because here's the thing. Trump could have brought those four women out anytime.
Right.
He could have brought them out in January or February. He needed cover.
Mm-hmm.
He needed cover on Friday, so he brought them out last night. In front of his kids. In front of oh, God.
Yeah, in front of the world. And the conference was pathetic, and he totally exploited them. It was a stunt. But I've never, ever seen anything that bad. I've never heard anything that bad out of somebody's mouth on a tape. And the whole weekend was disgusting. I was talking to some reporters last night that are with the campaign, and the buzz is that there's going to be a lot more.
Yeah, we've heard the same thing. Yeah, we've heard, and you know, that's the other thing, too, with Mark Burnett. Mark Burnett, the producer of The Apprentice.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Burnett, you know, is very proud of his devout Christianity. Is it really Christian to be hiding the truth about Donald Trump? I'm just asking.
And the New Zealand TV station that came out with that audio today.
Just asking. Pat Brady, you back later this week?
I will be back tonight.
All right. We'll see you later this week. Thanks for jumping on, bud.
All right. See ya.